I've been teaching high school geometry for 12 years now. It's a challenging subject, but I've always loved the way it can reveal the hidden patterns and structures in the world around us. I took this job fresh out of college, eager to share my passion with young minds. Over the years, I've seen countless students through my classroom, some struggling, some excelling, but all of them leaving an impact on me in some way. Outside of school, my life is fairly simple. I'm married to my high school sweetheart, and we have two young kids who keep us busy on weekends with soccer games and family outings. Teaching and family, that's my life, and I wouldn't have it any other way. But there's one experience from my teaching career that I'll never forget, no matter how much I want to. It's a story I feel compelled to share as a warning to others. Just remember, tragedy can strike anywhere, at any time, and we must always be prepared for the unthinkable. That particular morning started off on the wrong foot. I had overslept, jolted awake by the blaring of my alarm clock. I stumbled out of bed, hastily throwing on clothes and rushing to get out the door. In my frantic state, I nearly got into a car accident on the way to school, narrowly swerving to avoid a collision. My heart was pounding as I pulled into the parking lot, the adrenaline still coursing through my veins. As I hurried towards the school building, I was stopped by the principal. She informed me that due to budget cuts, they were letting go of a faculty member, a math teacher I had become good friends with over the years. This news hit me like a punch to the gut. I couldn't believe they were letting him go. After that, I made my way to my classroom in a daze, trying to process everything that had happened in the span of just a few hours. I took a deep breath and started organizing my materials for the day, trying to push the morning's events out of my mind and focus on the lessons ahead. The first period class was, thankfully, nice and smooth. I was so grateful that none of the students in my morning class caused me any further issues, since I was already having a rough morning. I was just starting to feel like I could breathe again when the unthinkable happened. It still makes me sick to my stomach just retelling this, but I heard several gunshots and screams echoing through the hallways. My classroom door was wide open too, so I quickly ran over to the door, slamming it shut and locking it. I flipped off the lights and ordered everyone to huddle in the far corner of the classroom, away from the view of the door's window. The students quickly followed my instructions and did as I asked. I tried to keep my voice calm and steady, but inside, I was terrified. I had no idea what was happening or if the shooter was nearby. All I could do was pray for our safety and that somehow we would make it out of this nightmare alive. Just after I had gotten my students to safety, I heard one of the office staff members come over the intercom, announcing that the school was officially going into lockdown. The announcement was followed by several more gunshots ringing out, each one making us flinch and cower further into our corner. Over the sound of the gunfire, I could hear a male voice yelling and ranting incoherently. I couldn't make out everything he was saying, but I caught something about Russian spies and how he was there to save everyone. It didn't make any sense. Eventually, I heard a loud commotion just outside my classroom door. I heard the police ordering the person to drop their weapon. To my immense relief, it seemed the person complied. We remained huddled in silence until the police came and evacuated us from the school. We were led outside, where I saw the rest of the faculty and students gathering, looking just as shaken as I felt. The day ended early as police swarmed the building, trying to piece together what had happened. In the following days, I heard from my colleagues that the shooter had been a former student who had been recently expelled. Apparently, he had been under the influence of drugs and alcohol during the incident. Miraculously, despite the number of gunshots I had heard, no one had actually been shot or injured. The police said the former student had just been randomly opening fire in the hallways and corridors. I don't have much information than that, and I probably never will. I just hope that the former student gets the help he so desperately needs. For the sake of this story, I'll just refer to myself as Joe. I won't be revealing my real name or the name of the technical college I attend for privacy reasons. I hope you understand. Anyway, I've been going to this school for the past 4 months to become an audio production specialist. It's been a pretty cool experience so far, but something happened a couple months ago that I still can't quite wrap my head around. I'm talking about mind-blowing, life flashing before your eyes type of stuff. I feel so lucky to even be here right now, telling you this story. Things could have easily taken a turn for the worse, and I might not be here at all. But I am, and I'm grateful for that. What I'm about to share with you is hands down the worst thing that's ever happened to me. I chose to study audio production because I've always had a passion for music and sound engineering. It's been a dream of mine to work in a recording studio and help create amazing albums. Plus, my girlfriend of 4 years has been super supportive of my decision to go back to school. Anyway, my experience at the technical college has been great so far. The classes are interesting, and I've learned a ton already. The professors are knowledgeable and always willing to help. I've also made some great friends there. We all share a love for audio and music, so we clicked right away. But even though things have been going well, I still get really nervous when I think about what happened on the day of the lockdown. It's like this underlying anxiety that's always there, just beneath the surface. I try not to dwell on it too much, but it's hard not to sometimes. So, on the day of the incident, I was in my sound design class. We were learning about different microphone techniques and how to capture the best audio quality. It was pretty interesting stuff, but about an hour into the class, I started feeling the urge to use the bathroom. I raised my hand, asked the professor if I could be excused, and made my way out of the classroom. As I was walking down the hallway towards the bathroom, I heard a bunch of police sirens outside. It sounded like there were a lot of them, but I didn't really think much of it at the time. I figured maybe there was a bad accident nearby or something. Anyway, I got to the bathroom, went into one of the stalls, and did my business. As I was washing my hands, I heard the bathroom door swing open. I didn't think anything of it at first, but then I heard heavy breathing and footsteps coming towards me. I turned around and saw a man wearing a ski mask standing there with a gun pointed right at me. My heart nearly stopped. We locked eyes and it felt like time came to a complete stop. Then he told me to back up against the wall, so I did. I put my hands up and told him I didn't want any trouble. In that moment, a million thoughts were racing through my mind. Was this really happening? Was I going to die? What about my girlfriend and our future plans? I was terrified and couldn't believe that something like this was actually happening to me. So there I was, standing against the wall with my hands up, face to face with this masked man holding a gun. He told me he wasn't planning on killing me, but if I tried anything stupid, he wouldn't hesitate to shoot. All I had to do was keep quiet and not move. I nodded, too scared to even speak. The man then pulled out a cell phone and made a call. He was talking to someone, telling them to hurry up and get there before the cops arrived. Apparently, the police were hot on his tail. He mentioned grabbing whatever he could, probably referring to a robbery. He kept urging the person on the other end to hurry, sounding more and more agitated. After a minute or so, he hung up. The tension in that bathroom was so thick you could cut it with a knife. I was just standing there, trying not to make any sudden movements, watching this all unfold. About 2 minutes later, I heard the police outside the bathroom door. They were ordering the man to drop his weapon and kick it over to the door. I could see the panic in his eyes, even through the ski mask. That's when the police rushed in, telling everyone to get on the ground, including me. I dropped to the floor immediately, putting my hands behind my head. It was all a blur after that. They apprehended the guy and cleared me after questioning. I don't really know what happened to him after that. I'm just thankful to be alive and unharmed. It's an experience I'll never forget, and I'm grateful every day that I made it out of that bathroom safely. It's been a few months since the terrifying lockdown incident at the high school where I teach, but I'm still struggling to cope with the aftermath. The nightmares are the worst part. I often wake up screaming and crying in the middle of the night, my heart racing and my body drenched in sweat. My husband has been incredibly supportive, holding me tight and whispering words of comfort until I calm down enough to fall back asleep. I've been seeing a therapist every week to work through the trauma, but progress has been slow. She tells me that healing takes time and that I need to be patient with myself, but it's hard not to feel frustrated when the memories of that day continue to haunt me. I never thought that my first teaching job would involve such a horrific experience, and I can't help but wonder if I'll ever feel truly safe in a classroom again. My name is Gina, and I graduated from a small liberal arts college in the Midwest, where I majored in English literature and minored in education. It was during my sophomore year that I met my husband Ben, who was studying business administration. We hit it off immediately and started dating, bonding over our shared love of books and our desire to make a positive impact on the world. After graduating, we got married in a small ceremony surrounded by family and friends. I always knew I wanted to be a teacher, so I started applying for jobs right away. I was thrilled when I landed a position teaching high school English at a well-respected school in the area. I remember feeling excited and nervous on my first day, but I quickly fell in love with my students and the challenges of the job. However, this dream job would end up becoming a living nightmare just a few short months later. I was in the middle of a lesson on Shakespeare's Hamlet when I heard a loud commotion outside my classroom. My therapist said that focusing on small details during a traumatic event is a way of coping, which is why I clearly remember the sunlight catching the dust particles in the air as I went to check the noise. When I peeked into the hallway, I saw a terrifying scene. A man, who I later found out was a former teacher who had been fired, had another female teacher in a chokehold with a knife to her throat. Other teachers and security guards were desperately trying to talk to him, their voices filled with fear and urgency. Suddenly, a lockdown was announced over the intercom. I quickly went back into my classroom and locked the door. Being new, I wasn't too sure about the lockdown rules, but my students seemed to know what to do. They gathered in the back of the room, looking scared and worried. I tried to stay calm, but inside, I was a nervous wreck. I couldn't stop thinking about the danger just outside the door. The terror I felt, knowing that another teacher was being held at knife point just outside my classroom, was indescribable. I had never witnessed anything so horrifying in my entire life. The screams of fear and desperation coming from the teacher in the hallway were heart-wrenching, and the man's enraged shouts gave me chills. I felt utterly helpless, knowing that I couldn't do anything to save her without putting my students and myself at risk. The situation escalated when the police finally arrived on the scene. From what I could hear inside the classroom, the man refused to cooperate with their demands. Suddenly, I heard the crackle of a taser and the sound of a body hitting the ground. The silence that followed was deafening. Later, I learned that thankfully, nobody had been seriously injured, at least not physically. It turned out that the man, a former teacher, had been fired for repeatedly sexually harassing the very same teacher he had held at knife point. He couldn't accept the fact that she was married and had absolutely no interest in him. The whole ordeal left me shaken, and I knew it would take a long time to recover from the trauma of that day. Every morning when I wake up, the first thing that hits me is the weight of regret, like a shadow that refuses to leave no matter how bright the day gets. I'm Scott, 23 years old, working long hours in a warehouse, barely making enough to cover my bills. Lately, I found solace at the bottom of a bottle, a habit I've been desperately trying to kick for the past year. It's a crutch, a way to numb the pain of what happened back in high school, a mistake that changed everything and cost me more than I ever imagined. Back then, life was different. I was on the high school football team, living the kind of high school experience you see in movies, full of excitement, camaraderie, and the kind of close-knit friendship that felt unbreakable. Our group consisted of four guys and a girl, all of us inseparable since freshman year. We shared everything, from secrets to dreams, even the old white van one of our friends' dads left sitting unused in their driveway. That van, which was central to our senior prank, a prank that was supposed to be harmless, a memorable send-off as we stepped into adulthood. Never in a million years did I think anyone could get hurt, let alone that it would go so disastrously wrong. The prank, which seemed brilliant at the time, revolved around using an old, beat-up white van that Neil's dad had left rusting in their driveway. Tanya, the only girl in our group, was to be the victim of a staged kidnapping right in front of the school. In the days leading up to the prank, her fearlessness was almost palpable. She trusted us completely, a fact that gnaws at me every day. The breach of that trust is the heaviest burden I carry. Tanya's laughter and courage, believing in us, trusting us, now feels like a weight that constantly presses down on my conscience. Neil, the friend with the van, had always been the most daring among us, but we never suspected he could take a joke too far. Richard and John, the other two guys in our crew, were the brains and the brawn. Richard could talk his way out of any situation, and John was the kind of guy you'd want on your side in a crisis, loyal to the core. We were a solid team, or so I thought. The idea for the prank was born one night as we were all hanging out at the local park, tossing ideas back and forth under the dim glow of the streetlights. We were determined to outdo the previous year's senior prank, to leave a mark so unforgettable that it would become the stuff of legend. Neil's eyes lit up when he pitched a kidnapping idea, and in our excitement, we didn't stop to consider the consequences. We wanted to create a moment that would etch our names in the history of our school, not foreseeing the irreversible impact it would have on all of our lives. That night at the park, as the plan began to take shape, Neil was the first to volunteer his dad's white van for the prank. I remember watching him, noticing a gleam in his eye that was too intense for a mere joke. It was as if he relished the thought a little too much. I threw in a snarky comment toward him about him needing to relax and how this wasn't some blockbuster movie. I was just trying to lighten the mood. His response was a weird look, one that didn't sit right with me, but in the excitement of it all, I brushed it off as Neil being Neil. We meticulously planned the timing, settling on the morning right before the first bell. It was strategic. We knew the entire school would be watching, the perfect audience for what we thought would be our legendary act. The idea was to create enough chaos to trigger a lockdown. In our minds, this was the pinnacle of high school pranks, a story that would be retold for years. We were fully aware that we might catch some serious heat from the school, but we naively believed the worst they could do was threaten our participation in the graduation ceremony. The morning of the prank, I was way more nervous than I'd like to admit. We had a group chat going, everyone throwing in messages about how pumped they were, mixed with a healthy dose of nervousness. Except for Neil. He was unusually quiet, his responses brief and distant. I tried to shake off the uneasy feeling settling in my stomach, telling myself it was just the jitters. Looking back, I wish I had listened to that nagging doubt. I should have questioned why Neil, normally the most gung-ho about our schemes, was suddenly the least talkative. That morning, right before the prank was supposed to happen, Tanya, Richard, John, and I were all ready, waiting for Neil. We got a text from him that just said, "Pulling up." We looked at each other, nervous but excited. When Neil's van pulled up to the curb near the school's main entrance, where students hang out in the morning, Tanya got ready. I saw Neil through the van's passenger side window and noticed he was wearing a ski mask, which we hadn't talked about. Suddenly, the van's side door opened and another guy with a mask, who we didn't recognize, grabbed Tanya and pulled her into the van. Neil drove off quickly after that. Everyone who saw this freaked out. Students ran inside the school as the security guards opened the doors. Richard, John, and I were confused, trying to figure out who the other masked guy was. Neil stopped answering our texts after that. The school went into lockdown, and we had to run into a nearby classroom. I realized then that things had gone way too far. I told the teacher about our prank, and soon we were talking to school security and the police. We showed them our texts to prove it was supposed to be just a prank, but Neil made it something much worse. The police told the school to send everyone home early. Later, the police found a van abandoned by a forest, but there was no sign of Tanya or Neil. They eventually caught Neil 30 miles away, but he wouldn't talk to them or show any regret. Tanya was never found. Neil did say during questioning that Richard, John, and I didn't know about his real plan. He showed no remorse. The police also ended up putting this on our records, and we weren't allowed to graduate because of it. The guilt of what happened, especially losing Tanya, still hurts. I continue to stay in touch with Richard and John. We all still feel terrible about the prank and what it led to. For me personally, it's a never-ending nightmare that I will never wake up from. I can't even imagine the pain and devastation this caused to her family. So, if you're a senior in high school looking for the next big idea for a prank, just take my advice. Don't do anything stupid. Please, keep it safe, and don't do anything that would put anyone's life in danger. That morning in 2017, I remember stepping outside to a world washed in sunlight, feeling the crisp air fill my lungs. It was a Monday, but the weight that usually came with the start of the week was lifted by the joy lingering from the weekend. My daughter had gotten married, and the happiness from the celebration still clung to me, making every step feel like I was walking on air. I had been the janitor at this high school for over 15 years by then, a familiar fixture in its hallways and classrooms, and I was on my way to start another routine day. Despite the time that's passed, I'm still here, pushing my mop and bucket through those same halls. However, since that day, there's been a shadow over my job that wasn't there before. My wife, God bless her, hasn't had a peaceful day since. Every evening, her sigh of relief when I walk through the door is both heartwarming and heartbreaking. She's grateful, and so am I, that I made it back home. That day of the lockdown changed everything for us. Surviving something so terrifying makes you see life differently. I'm just grateful to be here, telling this story, hoping against hope that nothing like this ever happens again. Even now, as I've gotten older, the memories of that day are still incredibly vivid in my mind. It was around 11 a.m. The school bell had just signaled the end of the first period, sending a surge of students spilling into the hallways, bustling to get to their next class. At that time, I was mopping the floor in a corridor near the rear entrance of the school, a spot that usually didn't see much foot traffic, making it a prime time for a quick cleanup. I had propped the door open to let in some of the cool, fresh air, enjoying the small comfort as I worked. That's when I noticed the door swing open wider than it was. A man barged in, wearing an orange jumpsuit, the kind you never want to see outside of a TV show. He was tall, muscular, and bald, and he shot me an aggressive look that froze me in place. It dawned on me in that instant that he was wearing a prison outfit. No sooner had that realization hit me than I found myself on the receiving end of a flurry of punches and kicks. This guy was clearly a crazed, escaped inmate, and he was unleashing his fury on me. I was completely blindsided by the attack, struggling to defend myself and make sense of the sudden, violent turn my day had taken. After the man attacked me, he muttered something about being there to, quote-unquote, have some fun, before storming off towards the main hallway, where the noise of students was coming from. As I lay there, trying to catch my breath and make sense of the pain, the sounds that followed were chilling. Screams and the kind of panic that grips you to the core. It wasn't long before a few people, trying to escape whatever horror was unfolding, came running towards the rear entrance. Unfortunately, some of them slipped and fell on the freshly mopped floor. Amidst the chaos, a couple of students noticed me on the ground, bloodied and battered, and rushed over to help me up. Right then, the lockdown alarm rang throughout the school. Despite the pain, I told the students trying to help me that I needed to check if others were hurt. I couldn't just leave knowing this maniac was inside the school. They begged me to stay put, to think of my safety first, but I couldn't. I ordered them to get out of the building and find safety. Pushing through the pain, I made my way to the hallway, expecting the worst. What I saw was heartbreaking. Several students were curled up on the ground, some with bloody faces, clear signs that the inmate had unleashed his violence on them too. But there was no sign of him in that part of the hallway, indicating he had moved further down. As the chaos continued to unfold, I noticed that most of the students had managed to make it inside classrooms, all of which were locked securely. I tried to attend to some of the students who were down, offering whatever aid I could, but my efforts were interrupted by the sound of the crazed inmate trying to kick in classroom doors further down the hall. The situation was dire, and just when I thought it couldn't get any more intense, a large group of police officers stormed into the school from various entrances. I could hear a chaotic frenzy erupting from the direction where I last heard the inmate, and I made a move to see what was happening. However, before I could get far, two officers ordered me to either leave the building immediately or find a safe place to shelter inside. Choosing the former, I went outside and joined a group of students and staff members huddled together in an area away from the building. It was a tense wait, but eventually, the police managed to secure the area. The inmate was captured and taken away, and the school day was abruptly ended. Out of respect for those who were present that day, I've chosen not to reveal any identifying details about the school or myself. That incident is something I wish never happened. I was reprimanded for leaving the door open, a mistake that weighs heavily on me. Despite this, due to my long tenure and generally good standing at the school, the administration decided against terminating my employment. The regret of my actions that day has stayed with me, and for a long time, I believed that I was to blame for everything that happened. However, school staff and counselors have reassured me that I shouldn't carry this burden. It's taken a few years, but I'm finally beginning to find some peace with myself over the incident. I've been a professor of history and cultural studies for nearly 7 years now. Teaching has always been a passion of mine, and I found my place at this college, which has become a second home to me over the years. The campus itself is not very large, but that's part of its charm. It's an inviting, calm space where the students and faculty alike can feel at ease. The smaller size of the campus fosters a close-knit community. It makes it less intimidating for the freshmen who are just starting their college journey, and I've always appreciated that aspect. Everything about this place suggested safety and academic pursuit, which made the events of the lockdown all the more shocking. That day of the lockdown was vastly different from the calm environment we had become familiar with, showing us how quickly peace can be broken. My day started off like any other. I made my usual quick stop at Starbucks for a coffee on my way to the college, a small ritual that always sets the right tone for my day. When I arrived, I bumped into Professor Howard, who teaches astrophysics. We exchanged a few words about our upcoming lectures and the day ahead, a brief but pleasant interaction that added to the morning's routine. After our chat, I headed to my classroom to prepare for my students. The morning lecture went smoothly, and soon it was time for my lunch break. I made my way downstairs to the campus cafeteria, a place I frequented for a midday break. As I stood in line contemplating what to order, a sudden commotion in the main lobby area caught everyone's attention. There were loud yells and screams that pierced the usual buzz of lunchtime chatter. Curiosity got the better of me, and I stepped out of line to see what was causing the uproar. That's when I saw him, a young man, probably in his early 20s, just standing there. He was holding a large machete, and even from a distance, I could see his head switching erratically from left to right. He didn't move from his spot, but the sense of danger was very real. As the situation unfolded, the young man started wandering around the lobby, his words a jumble of incoherence mixed with sudden, startling screams and yells. Campus security quickly intervened, forming a perimeter around him. They shouted for students and staff to leave the area immediately. Right then, the campus lockdown alarm blared through the speakers, and instructions for safety protocols echoed down the hallways. The man's demeanor shifted rapidly. He became openly hostile towards the security personnel, hurling threats and accusations with increasing aggression. His behavior escalated further as he began to swing the machete wildly, resembling a scene of sheer madness. Swings were not just aimless, some were directed threateningly close to security officers trying to contain the situation. The tension in the air was thick, charged with the fear of what might happen next. It was at this moment, amidst the chaos, that I heard the distant sound of police sirens. The sound was both a relief and a source of urgency, a hope that they would arrive swiftly to prevent the situation from spiraling further out of control. A campus security officer suddenly rushed towards me and the others in the vicinity, urging us to get as far away as possible. Through the chaos, I caught glimpses of police officers entering the main lobby, their guns pointed at the man who had caused all the turmoil. The urgency in the security officer's voice grew as he insisted we exit the cafeteria through the side doors immediately. Just as we complied, a gunshot echoed, sending a wave of panic through the crowd. People screamed and ran, rushing to get out. Once outside, the scene was one of confusion and fear. Police officers quickly directed us to move further back, while others cordoned off the cafeteria entrances with yellow crime tape. The sound of an ambulance siren filled the air about 10 minutes later. I later found out that the man had charged at the officers, which led them to stop him with a single gunshot. This incident happened last year, and since then, thankfully, there have been no further occurrences of such violence. I heard a few days after the event that the man survived and was being detained in the hospital, waiting to be arrested once medically cleared. It led many to speculate that he must have been under severe mental distress or influenced by drugs to act in such a dangerous manner. Security protocols have been improved since then, which helps to put our minds at ease.